bassist and composer Ben Allison with Safe Passage, the opening track from his new 14th album as a leader. It's called Moments Inside. His quartet on the album includes, rather unusual for jazz, two-guitar lineup, Chico Pinheiro and Steve Cardenas with Alan Mednard drums. I'm Carl Gerke, and this is Jazz Nightly on SDPB Radio. I'm with you from the Janet and Dion Kaler Studio in downtown Sioux Falls. Thanks for listening. Ben Allison first emerged on the New York jazz scene in the 1990s when he and some like-minded colleagues, including pianist Frank Kimbrough, saxophonists Michael Blake and Ted Nash, formed the Jazz Composers Collective. He released his first albums as a leader in the late 90s with many of these same musicians, and these albums showcased Allison's talent for writing inventive and memorable compositions while also displaying a rather daring experimentalism. And 9 years ago, Ben Allison formed his own record label, Sonic Camera Records, and along with producing, mixing, and mastering his own albums, he also designs the cover art. I spoke with Ben Allison from his home in New York City a few weeks ago about his latest album, Moments Inside. Ben Allison, welcome to Jazz Nightly on SDPB Radio.
Glad to be talking with you. Thank you.
You've got a wonderful new album out called Moments Inside, and I'm curious as to when you wrote the music for this album.
I wrote the music last spring. Wrote it in the spring, and then we recorded in June, and then mixed it in July and mastered it in August, and then sent it off to the pressing plant in September. It was kind of a quick turnaround, intentionally so. I do my own mixing these days, so I was able to spend some time over the summer doing that. But most of it was written, I would say, February to May, that time frame.
Now, that time frame is interesting because with COVID-19, that was at a moment when it seemed like maybe there was some hope that we were just getting over this. Did that have any impact at all in what you were writing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, when it's interesting, when artists sit down to write, I mean, at least in my case, I think most people would agree that you tend to just let the emotions flow. I mean, whatever is on your mind is what comes out. You know, you're reacting to the moment, and you're right. I mean, in that moment, even though seemed like there might be some light at the end of the tunnel, there was also just so much, a lot of hurt. I mean, I don't have to describe how tough the last few years have been. A lot of people, loved ones passing away, et cetera. So I was expecting actually the music to come out kind of reflecting that, to be, you know, filled with more with pain and referencing, because that's kind of what I was feeling. But it was surprising. When I was done, I was surprised to find actually the music, at least to my ears, is very beautiful, I hope, and maybe even positive and uplifting. You know, I mean, that's how it feels to me. It's much less dark than I thought it might have been, and I realized in retrospect that I wasn't just writing music that I was feeling. I was really writing the music that I needed. You know, it's kind of a therapeutic process, I guess, and that's what I needed. I didn't feel like writing music that reflected the darkness, because there's just been so much of it. And also at that time, I was listening, I've been listening to a lot of Brazilian music, but I was doing a deep dive on it and just enjoying it as every day, listening to a lot of great songwriters. And Brazilians and Americans have had this really long-standing love affair musically, I think. And one of the things that I really admire about their writing style is they write these very lyrical, beautiful melodies. Even the songs that speak of pain, and many of them do, they're always beautiful and lyrical. And I just really love that about the culture. And so that was coming through. So I started referencing some of these kind of Brazilian kind of sounds. I didn't want to do a Brazilian jazz record, but I did that. It's more like my feeling about their music through the lens of a New York jazz musician.
That's the way it came across to me as a listener. It is very peaceful in a way, and very melodic and lyrical, and it really starts that way from the opening track on the album, Safe Passage.
Yeah, that was probably the first tune I wrote when I sat down to do this you know, and the only thing I knew at that point was that I was going to include, in addition to the drummer who I've had on my recent records, Alan Mednard, and my longstanding collaborator, Steve Cardenas, with whom I've made many records, I knew I was going to ask a great Brazilian guitarist, Chico Pinheiro, who lives in New York, and he's been here for, at least 10 years, probably more. But I got a chance to play with him over 2 years ago. And I did a concert in which Chico and Steve Cardenas and Anthony Wilson, another incredible guitarist, played together, and I was the fourth. And to hear Steve and Chico's approaches and the way they played off of each other, and they're kind of, you know, they were just looking at each other and laughing and smiling. I could just tell there was this great rapport, even as they approached their instruments very differently. It was clear that they had a very strong simpatico. So I was thinking, yeah, let me ask Chico if he can do this. And that's the only thing I knew when I first sat down to write this, that it was that he was going to be involved. But that helped kind of guide my thought process too.
So how do they play off each other on this album?
You know, they have very different sounds, for one thing. I don't want to classify anyone's particular sound, but they play different types of guitars, and they have different approaches to the way they construct melodies, the way they play rhythms. But they're very complementary, and I know that they, and you can hear it on the record, and I just remember this so distinctly when we were recording, how they pushed each other in surprising ways. I mean, I heard Steve start to, you know, kind of play and kind of emulate some of the things that Chico was doing. Later on in the session, Steve started doing some of the same things, and I could hear Chico doing the same thing, like listening to the way Steve was approaching sections and kind of playing off of that. They also complement each other in the sense that they have this such a deep conversation going. So they're supportive of each other, but then get out of the way so the other person can, you know, take the lead for a moment. And I really wanted to try to capitalize on that energy. And leave room for them to do that, all while Alan and I are kind of doing the same thing with the bass and drums. So hopefully that comes across, but that was definitely something that I had in my mind when I was writing the music, to make sure there was that the music fit that, you know, was well suited for that kind of approach, because not all music is. Some music is very constructed in a certain way, but I really wanted to leave that space for them to do that. And they really rose.
What is it that you like about the sound of the guitar and a two-guitar drum-bass lineup is fairly unusual?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. In jazz, it kind of is. I mean, not in a lot of other forms of music.
Right.
I mean, the Beatles come to mind.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, in most of the music I grew up listening to, the guitar was heavily featured. I mean, I'm a child of the 70s, I think, but, you know, a lot of the music I listened to, I was born in the 60s. And so the music that I heard as a young child and then into early adulthood was music of that era. And, you know, especially in the 60s, guitar was kind of king. It was the king instrument. It was the one that was featured. There were guitar solos. I mean, I'd go to see rock bands and there were guitar solos. And it was just the instrument that you heard most often, at least the one I heard most often. I discovered saxophones and trumpets and those sort of instruments later in life, once I started kind of branching out and exploring other types of music. But the music I originally heard was very guitar-driven. And so that has a special place in my heart. You know, you kind of, you're a product of where you come from, for good and bad. You know, you're everything you create, I think, at least in my case, I can say everything that I create is almost in reaction to what I've experienced, you know, and those formative experiences are extremely important.
How does your composing process work today? How do you begin? Is it just pen and paper, or are you at the guitar, are you at the piano? How does it work?
It's changed over the years. Yeah, I mean, I think I started mostly writing on the piano, even though I don't really play piano. But I would sit down and just pick out things. I always had a piano in the house when growing up, and then when I came to New York, I went to New York University. There were pianos around, and then as soon as I got my own place, I bought a little upright, spinet upright, and so I would sit at the piano and write. And it wasn't until I was in my 20s that I started to branch out and write in different ways for many years after. And to this day, I write a lot on the bass just because it's so easy to not think about it. So there's nothing really conscious or technically limiting between my thoughts and my, you know, what I want to play. It just comes out. So it's fluid. So I usually play bass and I often sing along with it. And that's, I get kind of a, you know, the bottom part and then a melody kind of counterpoint. So that's, so a lot of my music is contrapuntal in that way. But then once I started working and rediscovering guitar, I do write quite a lot on the guitar. And then the latest thing, which is, I say latest, probably the last 10 years or so, I've been using Logic a lot, which is a kind of a MIDI sequencing software, mostly because it's, again, so easy to use that it can facilitate getting ideas out quickly, you know, and then kind of documenting, because that's really the challenge. You have these flashes. I mean, at least I do. I have these flashes in my mind of a sound, and I have to, they're fleeting sometimes, and I have to get them out quickly and somehow document them. So sometimes that's just singing them into my phone when I'm walking down the street, or playing bass and singing along with it and recording it into my phone. But Logic is kind of the next step up from that, where I can be a little more thoughtful and start to construct things a little bit more. So I found that pretty helpful.
Touched on this a little bit about composing. I'm always kind of curious if jazz composers think differently musically depending on their primary instrument. I mean, do you think a composer who's a bass player writes music that's different from someone whose primary instrument is a piano or a trombone or a saxophone?
Maybe. I mean, I think for one thing, there are certain composers whose music and playing, I've mentioned this before, said this out loud a few times over the years, but whose playing and composing are like totally intertwined. I mean, I think of people like Thelonious Monk as an obvious example. So the way he plays piano sounds like the way he writes tunes, and vice versa. I mean, they're kind of the same thing. Charlie Parker, same thing. His melodies kind of sound like his solos, and vice versa. Ornette Coleman, you know, people like that. And so I'm heavily influenced by musicians like that. So in some ways, my music is tied to my bass playing, and my bass playing is the product of, you know, what I work on compositionally. And when I'm teaching my students, we actually work on this quite a bit, that idea. So yes, I think writing from the instrument that you play is sometimes can yield great results, and sometimes it's the only way people do it. For me, sometimes I do it that way, sometimes I don't. I think bass players do have a kind of unique perspective, of course. They tend to hear things in maybe slightly different ways in terms of the focus. But, you know, I find people, I can't always tell. I mean, my friend Ted Nash, for example, he does play piano very well. He's a saxophonist primarily. I mean, that's his instrument that he plays professionally. Reeds, all saxophones. But his tunes have a lot of really interesting dense harmony. And when we talk about it, that's what he talks to me about. He's like, yeah, I hear harmony. And that's kind of how I express that. Those are like the first ideas that I have are harmonic ones. I mean, he told me this once. And so, yeah, even though he's a saxophonist, which is a single line instrument, I think he thinks very deeply about the harmony as he's writing. I tend not to. I tend to think more contrapuntally and melodically in a linear way. And but, you know, on this last record, I must admit, I dove more deeply into harmony than I have in the past. I mean, even Steve, who's been playing with me for years, commented on that these tunes have more chord changes than I've sometimes written. But I think I was thinking, with all of the lush orchestrational possibilities of two guitars, that I wanted to flesh out some deeper harmonies.
You're listening to Jazz Nightly on SDPB Radio. I'm Carl Gerke. My guest is Ben Allison. He's out with a new album titled Moments Inside. And you mentioned the undercurrent of Brazilian music in this. And one of these original compositions of yours is called Milton, which is dedicated, or you must have had Milton Nascimento in mind when you were writing that.
For sure, yeah. There's no... You can't be listening to Brazilian music and not hear Milton Nascimento. I mean, as a singer, obviously, but also as a composer. And he, one of the things that I really love about his tunes is the way he stacks up harmonies and moves them sometimes over a pedal point. He'll use these kind of really interesting chord, what musicians call slash chords. That is, like, there's a fundamental harmony, and on top of it, there's like these chords moving in interesting ways. That's one of his... He has a lot of things that are kind of signatures of his music, and that's one of them. And so as I was writing, and I was definitely inspired by him and the kind of melodies that he writes, it was a no-brainer. Actually, that's one of the few that I wrote probably a couple of years ago. So I didn't write all the music last spring. I guess I lied when I said that. Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, I did write a few of the songs over the last few years. Milton is one of them. So I know that I was already thinking about this sound and concept by the time spring rolled around and it was time to get serious. It was already in my mind. It had just been kind of percolating, but that's kind of how I tend to work. In between records, ideas just ruminate and bounce around, and then all of a sudden I sit down and kind of crank. They get very methodical, especially if I have a deadline.
Another track on this new album, Moments Inside, that really captured me, Breakfast with Eric. What kind of struck me about this is that you're playing straightforward groove on the bass, and then Alan Bednard on the drums. It almost sounds to me like sort of polyrhythmic double time. And then you get the two guitarists, Chico Pinedo and Steve Cardenas, who are playing off each other. I think it's a very exciting track, very exciting music going on there.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a departure track for me for the record. And I, you know, when I brought it in to play with the guys, I was wondering whether or not this would fit, because it is kind of stylistically different in some ways. But in other ways, it's not. And the way it ended up working, I think, so perfectly is that it became this really just tremendous vehicle for Steve and Chico to trade. So it's basically a blues. It's a long form blues. It's in six, so it's, you know, which is not a very odd meter, but it's not four. It's a slightly different meter. And you're right, Alan is playing kind of a double time figure over the top of it. That's something that he came up with. I mean, I said let's not play this in six, and let's not play it kind of as a jazz waltz or swinging in the traditional sense. What else you got? And he just started playing that, and I was like, oh, that's great. And so we just, you know, it just came together quite easily. And then who should play the melody? Who should solo? And then I can't remember who. Somebody said, how about we both solo? We just trade. Great. And that was kind of the extent of it. We just came up with that. It took about 2 minutes. And there you go.
There are seven original pieces by you, and then there's a composition by Herbie Nichols, and you've been playing Herbie Nichols' music for quite a while. You were part of the Herbie Nichols Project. This composition is called House Party Starting, and I'm curious, what is it about Herbie Nichols' music that really captures you, that you've recorded his music, and you've even dedicated part of your musical career to his compositions?
First, I'll give you the reason that this tune is on the record, and then I'll just quickly work backwards from there. So the reason that I put this on the record is, among the many other tragedies that happened last year, one of my dearest friends, person with whom I collaborated on so many projects, so many records, Frank Kimbrough, very suddenly passed away. Shocking. You know, he was a 64, way too soon, way too early. And it was a shock, it kind of, to a lot of people, myself included. And so I knew that I wanted to include something on the record that was thinking about him a lot. And now, going back so many years, you mentioned the Herbie Nichols Project. Early on in my career, early 90s, just out of school, trying to find my way, trying to make connections, I ran into Frank Kimbrough, and we got together just to play in the basement of the school where I was teaching at the time. And he brought in a Herbie Nichols tune, and I believe it was House Party Starting was the first one. I had never really heard Herbie Nichols. I mean, I'd heard his name before. So I had this not fantastic feeling about Herbie Nichols until Frank started bringing in this music. Well, we brought in that, and then another one, and then another one. And I was just blown away. I mean, still to this day, I mean, in my humble opinion, I think Herbie Nichols is one of the great jazz composers. I mean, I personally think he's on the level of Wayne Shorter and Thelonious Monk. That's my opinion. For sheer originality, perspective, stylistic, you know, approaches, just the interest, it's just how interesting they are. They're so unusual. I mean, he really had his own voice as a composer, and that's really hard to do. Equally interesting to me was the fact that he wasn't a household name, that I didn't even know, you know, I'm a jazz musician and I didn't really know his music, never really heard it, you know. And so, I mean, when Frank passed, the one idea was to record one of his tunes, but we had just done a very long, big kind of retrospective project on his music for a label called Nouvelle. There was, I don't know if you heard any of that music, but they were recorded over a number of days. I think about 60 musicians were involved. It was this huge thing. We each went in and played on a couple tunes. So we had done that, and it was wonderful. And so I was thinking, what else could I do? And I thought of this tune, and because it just reminds me of him.
Arrangement quite a bit different from the Herbie Nichols recording from 1955 piano trio. You've got the two guitars, and here I hear a little bit of a Brazilian bossa nova thing going on.
Yeah, we put a little kind of bossa beat to it, but you know, the thing about Herbie's music is it's so evocative of so many different styles. I know he wanted to be a concert pianist. So he studied European classical music, and he wanted to play classical concert grand piano. But he, once he got into jazz, he started taking some of those sounds. I know he credits Prokofiev as a big influence, and you can hear it. But you know, he started taking sounds from those repertoire, and including in his own music. And so I think from the very beginning, when we started uncovering his tunes and playing them and fleshing them out, adding horns, because all of his recordings were done just in trio format, so you never heard a horn player play them, adding horns, all of these other little colors and references kind of started popping out, and I realized how broad his music is and how rife it is for interpretation. And I always think of interpretation as being a sincere form of flattery, that is, taking someone else's music, who you love and who you admire musically, and doing your thing with it, trying to take it in and live with it and experience it, and then put it back out there somehow changed with your, you know, from your perspective. That's what I tried to do.
Ben Allison, congratulations on this wonderful new album, Moments Inside, and thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us on Jazz Nightly.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for reaching out and asking me to call in.
That's bassist and composer Ben Allison. I spoke with him a couple weeks ago about his new album, Moments Inside, featuring 7 original compositions and 1 composition by Herbie Nichols. As a companion to this album, Moments Inside, Allison has a digital release, Moments Outside, and this is a 24-minute unedited free improvisation based on themes for Moments Inside, recorded at the very end of the session. I'm Carl Gerke, and you're tuned to Jazz Nightly on SDPB Radio.